As I remember, California State Polytechnic College presents an interview with another distinguished retired staff member. This one is Ted Matthew. Ted, what was your first contact with Cal Poly and your first recollection of having been interviewed and so on?
My first meeting with a representative of Cal Poly was at Berkeley. I went there to interview Mr. McCorkle. He suggested that I come down to the college, see whether I liked it, and meet some of the members of the physical science department, which I did. When I arrived at the campus and was walking through the administration building, I ran into Dave Cook and was rather surprised because he had once been a student of mine at San Mateo Junior College, had later gone to Berkeley, finished his work there, and had come apparently to Cal Poly to teach in the mathematics department.
So this was pleasant then, seeing an old student. Now, Ted, I realize that during your period of service on the faculty here, it covered a time when the campus changed tremendously from a great many temporary structures to many or most of the permanent ones we have now. And you have a series of catalogs over the time. What's the first catalog you have, and what did we find at that time? What year was it?
The first catalog I have, which was 1948-49, is the one that I received when I came to the college. Of course, I interviewed Gene Bowles at the time that I came here. Dr. Bowles was head of the physical science department, and he took me around, introduced me to the other members of his staff, and it was after my meeting with him and looking over the facilities that I accepted the appointment here.
What do you find in that year in terms of many temporary structures that aren't here anymore?
Well, the buildings that we had our offices in were wooden buildings. The little offices were quite small, just about room for a desk and two chairs. There was a hole in the wall to the office adjacent to mine where a telephone had been placed. And the telephone was shared by me and by Bruce Kennelly. Whichever one happened to answer it would find out for whom the call came, and then that person, of course, would enter into the conversation. But these offices had only half walls, so there was some interference because of the fact that quite a bit of what went on in this particular building was heard by everyone in the offices, because the sound, of course, traveled from one part of the building to the other through these half walls.
Was there quite a lot of temporary housing on the campus then? What kind and so on?
Yes, adjacent to the wooden buildings where we had our offices, there were some rather crude lecture rooms and rooms for laboratory work, and a very, very small little preparations room, which had to be used by all of the members of our chemistry department to make preparations for laboratory, and also whatever preparations we were able to make for lectures. But we had two of our laboratories, which were just in Quonset Hut. And quite a few of our lectures were in the metal buildings, which were the old Quonset huts, which were left over from the pre-flight naval training.
And was there quite a little temporary student housing on the campus then?
Yes. The old picture, which is in the front of this California State Polytechnic College bulletin of 1948-49, shows a lot of temporary housing, an area of the campus known as Vetville, which had a lot of very small housing units for students. And up along the edge of the hills, there were many, many trailers which were used by students who had families, and some of them had families enough to require that they have two trailers.
That would be in about in the area where the newer brick dormitories are now?
Yes, I think so. And there are also some small apartments up there that were used by some members of the faculty up along the edge of the hills.
Now, what were some of the changes that you find in the next year, in 1949-50, in the picture in the catalog?
As I look at these two pictures in the catalog of 48-49 and 49-50, I notice that there's a rather bare area where the library now is. And in the picture for 49-50, many of the buildings of the library structure, are pretty well shaped, and you can see some indication of work still going on in this rather bare area which was shown the previous year. So apparently the library got its start somewhere along about 48-49 and was being completed in 49-50.
And there certainly is an even greater increase in the temporary student housing, isn't there, in this 49-50 catalog?
Yes, I think this was reflected in the increase in enrollment which took place about this time. Many of the veterans who had been given GI bills had come back to get their education and make use of the government aid. And there's a very, very large increase in the number of trailers up along the edge of the hills, which were used to house these many of these students who didn't have other places in which to live.
Perhaps some of this tremendous increase was that the years of their entitlement, perhaps, were maybe beginning to run out, too. Is that right?
This is probably true, and they wanted to take advantage of their bill of rights there to get their education before this time lapse would occur.
Now, the next catalog that you have here, Ted, is the 5960, and there were certainly some tremendous changes that took place during that 10-year period. Is that right?
That's right. We were talking about these trailers in which the students had been living. In the area just north and west of where those trailers are located, there are now quite a few larger dormitories which are making their appearance. And in the center of the picture, the new science area is developing, and you can see many of those buildings in this picture, which was taken in 59 and 60.
And one of the buildings in that picture was one of particular interest to you, Ted. What was that?
This was the big new science building complex, which included the biological sciences and the physical sciences.
And you had an opportunity then to be in this new building for several years before your retirement.
Yes, and this was a great joy. Compared to what we had had before, this was so beautifully equipped. The laboratories were large and had very good equipment. The lecture rooms were adequate. And the convenience of our laboratory supply rooms and all of the facilities were so much better. Proper hoods where we had to be working with gases and fumes. And everything was so much more convenient. And our offices were now large and adequate and well-equipped.
Well, this is certainly true of the permanent development of the campus, that a building was built for a purpose and designed and equipped for that purpose. Isn't that right?
That's very true. And, of course, we learned from working in cramped quarters with inadequate buildings what our needs were, and we tried to put those needs into the planning for these new buildings. And I think that the plans were very successfully executed.
And Ted, the picture in the 1960-61 catalog shows that this last year had been one of tremendous building activity. What are some of the changes just in the year period?
As I look at this picture, I'm amazed at what has happened in the area to the southeast of the science complex. You can see the in the picture the dining complex under construction. And of course, across the street, there is now a big gymnasium which has taken shape. There is also, just adjacent to it, some evident preparation for what became the little theater. But all of the area up there to the east against the foothills now have been cleared. This area has been cleared so that no longer do we see any of those little trailers. Also, to the northwest of the science complex are the ag buildings. These are beautiful buildings which show up here in the big parking area to the hillside of these, on the hillside. And it looks as though this whole area is being made ready for the new buildings which later were to go in nearby.
That would include the math and home economics building in there also.
That's true. As one looks down from those agricultural buildings toward the library, which is all nicely landscaped in this picture, there are the math buildings and the
home ec building.
Home ec building there.
Fine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, right in the center of the picture here is evidence of this big building, which is has become Engineering East, which looks almost complete now.
And but you still have the Quonset huts where Engineering West is now located.
Yes, those are still there. Apparently, the clearing of those and clearing of the wooden buildings hadn't yet taken place.
Another thing that you get out of the catalog, I guess, it probably shows the growth of the staff in physical science, too. Is that right, Ted?
That's true, George. When I came, the list of instructors in physical sciences indicated only 9 individuals. But in 1961, I noticed in looking at that catalog that there were 24. Now, of course, this was still a combined staff for physical sciences. The separation into two different departments, I think, came a couple of years later. So that at the present time, the number is even larger. And, of course, there are two departments where there was only one at that time.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ted, I know that you are an individual with a lot of drive and a lot of tremendous ability and a lot of previous experience, and I'm real sure that you hadn't been here very long before you began to take a real active part in things on the campus. What was one of the first things that you got into?
One of the first things, George, was the early development of a group that would represent the faculty where discussions could be held which might be of benefit to the administration. I think the name of this first group was called the College Council. And I was sent there as a department representative. As I remember it, each department sent a representative, and then officers were elected. And meetings were held about once a month, and subjects were taken up which were of interest to the instructors in the different departments, and particularly subjects that were thought that should be brought to the attention of the administration. And the effort was made to try to get the administration to accept some of the recommendations of this body so that it would make it easier for instruction to be given and also make the results more effective as far as the students were concerned.
And you were one of the early chairmen this group did?
Yes. I'm not sure whether I was the second or the third chairman, but I think the second. And at this time, the activity of this group was beginning to increase, and I think its influence was being felt a little more by the administration.
Was it your job as a chairman to transmit the thinking and recommendations of the council to the administration?
I believe that was the job of the chairman. Whenever a resolution was adopted or a recommendation had been made, It was the responsibility of the chairman to carry that to the administration.
Ted, what would you say your batting average was during that period?
I think it was pretty close to 0-0.
Was this because there weren't facilities or funds or what might have been the reason for it?
Well, we had a president who had very strong opinions as to how this college should be run. And he wasn't quite ready to accept recommendations from the members of the faculty. This took a little education, and finally we began to get more cooperation, and he, I think, really began to appreciate some of the ideas that the faculty people suggested.
And are you familiar with the more official structure that takes place today?
I haven't really been closely connected to, with these changes, but I understand that the relationship is a very cordial one.
Well, I think it's not only cordial, but I think that according to the planning in the state college system, that the faculty staff council not only has a responsibility, but has quite considerable authority in their recommendations and their findings.
This is very encouraging, I think, George, and I feel that perhaps, even though at the beginning we didn't seem to be getting very much accomplished, that perhaps this was something that had to grow gradually, and finally over the state it began to be felt that this was an important contribution.
And Ted, as I remember it, you took an active part too in the state employees organization too.
Yes, although I wasn't very active originally, they began to look around for people who could be forced into the job of president, and along about 1955, I guess it was, I was elected president of the CSE chapter here. This, of course, made it a rather interesting additional responsibility to attend some of the state meetings, which I enjoyed very much.
And it gave you an opportunity to learn some of the problems of state employees in areas other than education.
That's true.
Did you have a feeling, Ted, in these conferences that education, in spite of its problems, was perhaps a very enjoyable and very rewarding kind of a job?
Yes, I did, George. One of the things that impressed me very much was the efficiency with which these large meetings were conducted. I had never really sat in a body in which new ideas were introduced and action was taken, and I was amazed at the smoothness of the operation and what I would consider a very efficient handling of their affairs.
Now, you were representing a group that primarily were not civil service employees, whereas a bulk of those attending these meetings would be in areas that were completely controlled by civil service. Now, were the problems different, or was there a different atmosphere, or what did you find?
I thought that the two groups cooperated very well. Each understood the other's problems much better than I had realized. And I think that the unity in with which they tackled their problems was something that was very commendable.
Fine. Now, you were also head for a long time of another program that was set up here on the campus. What was that, Ted?
This was the Disaster Committee. A letter was sent to all of the college presidents from Sacramento requiring that such a committee be set up. And it was my job to try to work out the first organization on our campus. President McPhee asked me to organize this committee and to begin to set up its various regulations. And we met, I think, about once a month for many years, trying to work out our plans for any emergency that might arise.
What was the major disaster that was envisioned as being a possibility and for which you were planning?
I would say that the chief thing for which we planned, the chief possible disaster, was radioactive fallout. We felt that if there should be a war, which would involve probably Russia and the United States, and intercontinental missiles were launched to the West Coast, that probably one of the target areas would be the Vandenberg Air Force Base, where, of course, we had missiles pointed in their direction. So we studied very carefully what the requirements might be to protect our particular college from any fallout, and we made plans which would try to meet such an emergency.
And you did, over the years, develop a comprehensive plan, and was this scrutinized any other place, made use of any other place?
Yes. Our plan, I think, was one of the first that was really developed in any large entirety. And we were asked by many of the other state colleges to send them copies of our plan so that they might perhaps pattern their plans somewhat on ours. And we did receive one or two from other places by request so that we could compare the plans at other colleges with our own to see if we had left out anything in our planning.
Would one of the major problems, Ted, be to find enough safe shelter for the tremendous number of students that were on the campus?
Yes, we not only had to try to find some sort of shelter to which students could go in case of a warning of an attack, but we had to make provision for water supply. We had to consider some type of food storage so that we would have this available. We had medical equipment which was shipped to us, which could be assembled and be used as a sort of a small hospital for any cases that we might have to take care of, so that the whole plan was rather carefully worked out to make sure that if we had to put our students in a safe place, and even though they might have to stay there as long as several days or several weeks, that we could get by. We would have difficulties, undoubtedly. We had enough buildings which we had selected which we thought were safe so that we could put all of our students and faculty in those buildings.
And you were active as the head of this committee right up to the time of your retirement, were you, Ted?
Yes, I think so. I'm not sure the exact date when this committee was first organized, but I think it was about 1952. And our committee met and worked on this for about 10 years up to the time of my retirement.
Mm-hmm. Well, that certainly then leads pretty naturally into what have you been doing since you retired? What are some of your hobbies? Have you had a chance for travel and so on?
Well, George, the big thing that one does, I think, after retirement is just to relax and rest for a while. But we have done a lot of traveling. We enjoy going to various parts of the West. We have a son and his family living in Oregon, and we visit there quite frequently. We have relatives scattered all over the West, and we do some traveling to visit them. We have a place up in the mountains at Bass Lake near Yosemite, which we spend at which we spend quite a bit of our time. This is a beautiful spot at about 3,500 feet alongside a lake, and this probably is one of our favorite places in California.
And do you go out and swing one of those clubs once in a while?
Yes. Golf is still probably my chief outlet for my energy other than gardening, and I've puttered around a little bit, too, with some painting. There are some good classes that are given for adults in this community in painting at all stages, for beginners and for those that are more advanced. And I've discovered that painting can be really quite a joy. I've learned a lot in reading, and I've had a lot of fun playing with it.
Have you exhibited any of your paintings so far?
One. I think I only Been willing to show one so far, but I do enjoy going to the exhibits. I think they're in most ways quite outstanding for a small community.
Well, real good. Well, I know that that you and Eunice are the kind of people that are going to enjoy life and get a lot out of your retirement, and you certainly have a beautiful home and beautiful landscaping and a most enjoyable place to spend such time as you are here and aren't not playing golf and so on. Well, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, and you've made a real contribution to this series, as I remember. This interview has been conducted by George P. Cooper.